Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Well, it's near the end of the week. That means it's time for DC Signal to Noise. I'm John Harris, along with Jim Wiesmeyer and Annalisa Laca. And a little early this week, Thursday on this week, instead of our usual Friday, but we've got radio studio reconstruction coming on Friday. So we're hitting you a little early this week, but plenty to talk about. Jim and Annalisa, I guess let's start with the what has been the news wrapping up this week is the on-again, off-again meatpacking plant closures. I know, Annalisa, this has hit particularly close to home for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're seeing some issues, particularly in the beef and hog sectors, but it's impacting everywhere. I mean, we had several loads of animals that were ready to go that we haven't been able to get rid of. It's looking like maybe they can go next week, but I think it's hitting everywhere, not just the majors.
Now, Jim, we had the announcement from President Trump this week, the executive order signed, basically declaring meatpacking plants essential. What does this do for the problem in not only the meatpacking industry, but then on down the chain into farms and ranches? What does it do and what doesn't it do?
Well, what it does do, it's finally focused the president, and it's really not his fault in my judgment, on this significant issue, that it took this long to focus on an essential industry such as meat is beyond me. What it showed is that the White House Corona Task Force, led by Vice President Mike Pence, and then USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue, was very tardy, if at all, in advising the president of how serious the situation was. In fact, the signal that I got earlier this week is that it took a call from several meat industry officials to relatively new White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who then briefed President Trump on the matter. And the very next day, you saw the executive order and the tapping of the Defense Production Act. That's the first things on it. What will it? What doesn't it do? It doesn't give the comfort at this particular time to the majority, probably, or not to all of them, to workers in the meat producing plants. In Pro Farmer, we're asking the question this week: would you feel safe if you worked in a meat processing plant?
Yeah, and I think we've heard, especially from some of those who do work at the meat processing plants, that they still have concerns. This certainly provides some limited liability cover to the plants themselves, gives them a little more argument to stay open amid some of these cries from various places for them to shut down. So it lessens the likelihood of some of these rolling shutdowns under political pressure. But it doesn't change the reality that we've had some very serious problems with coronavirus outbreaks in these packing plants. And if that's going to continue, they're still going to have no choice but to either limit production or shut down just because of availability of workforce.
Absolutely. But which again goes back to the tardiness of getting the necessary tests. Now they're saying they're going to do that now to check the workers and also the necessary PPE equipment to protect the workers on that. Wouldn't you think that would have been done before, not only by the meat industry itself, but also from the government who, what, weeks ago said agriculture was an essential industry? I'm sorry, I cannot see any positiveness out of this great report card for the administration, but definitely USDA in this quarter. Let's hope they improve their act. And even on the matter of liability, John, when you read the Production Defense Act, I think it gives liability, protection. But again, Sonny Perdue said Trump's executive order will not remove legal liability, but it will give them a, quote, defensible answer should they be sued, as long as they follow the CDC and OSHA guidance. Figure that one out. Bottom line, courts often consider compliance with those standards and guidance as evidence in an employer's favor in litigation. I guess that's the support that, the meat companies have.
Well, if it at least puts them in a position where they feel more likely to keep the plants open and at the same time take measures to keep workers safe, then it will be of a benefit. But, we talked about this last week, Jim, that if these are essential workers, we need to treat them like essential workers and, not just make sure that the plants stay open, but make sure that we take care of the workers in a manner that they are in shape to keep those plants open.
Yeah, I mean, a phrase you often hear in the union people is essential workers, not sacrificial workers. I mean, that's rough, but I'm telling you, when you're seeing these the deaths and the number of cases in the plants and the slowness that, again, I'm not going to let the industry off the hook on this one either. The industry did on this one, but especially the government that should have been focused on this. Now, the positive side is what you said. This should give meat companies who follow the guidance confidence that, when they go to court for challenges, they will have the backing of the Department of Labor. That's in print. Okay. So I agree with you. That's the concept. But as far as market impacts already, wholesale beef prices have jumped to a record. They're over 60% from the low. Pork prices are the highest since November. But the frustration on the part of producers is that if you can't get your animal to market, you can't garner those rising prices. That's frustration. Then we have the other policy signal that was clear this week as a result of this. If you can't get the animal to the market, you have to start killing them yourselves, euthanizing, etc. I know of one hog producer operation who took, it's so sad, who took 15 hours to shoot 4,000 pigs.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And amid, you can imagine the emotion having to do that. Now, let's go into the policy signal this week. You had USDA.
Let's hold off. I want to get into that just a little bit because, there was a big signal coming from Colin Peterson yesterday, and we want to talk about that in just a little bit. But first, I want to turn to Annalisa in reacting to this announcement, the executive order from President Trump, the commodity groups, all of the livestock groups were extremely upbeat in their response. Is there any room for optimism in that announcement for those groups, Annalisa?
Well, I think they feel seen and they feel heard. And, I think Jim mentioned that, producers want packing plants open. Unfortunately, this does nothing to make that happen. I mean, virtually nothing. You guys both know that I always err on the side of less government than more. And so I was not particularly thrilled with this announcement, but I also think, packers are going to have to start supplying more PPE. There is going to be more testing involved, and all of that costs money. And my guess is that that's going to be passed on to the consumer. So I think that this is demand erosion eventually. I think that they felt like they've been seen by the president, which is great. I'm not sure this is the right move.
Yep. So, all right. So given that, Jim, let's turn to where you were headed. We heard this week, Greg Henderson over at Drovers told us that there's about a week's worth of cattle backed up at this point. That's only going to continue to grow. And unfortunately, cattle can deal with it for a little bit, unlike pork producers who really that line is so fine-tuned that there's very little wiggle room to hold on to hogs beyond the point that they'd be typically sent to the packing plant. And on the hog side, Congressman Colin Peterson, chairman of the House Ag Committee, yesterday at an event in Worthington, Minnesota, in his home district, among other things, said that they need to clear about 160,000 head of hog a day to keep up with that supply line. So that's, you know, either going to be through processing or through euthanasia in the instance that you mentioned. But he pointed out the big problem in this. In the past, when we've had to cull the herd through euthanasia, it has been because of disease. And the Commodity Credit Corporation is set up so that there can be funding to cull animals for a disease problem. There is not a provision in the CCC, however, Jim, to cull animals because of a supply or because of the supply chain problems that we're seeing right now because of COVID-19. And he came out very strongly saying he guarantees that that's something that's going to be addressed in this next COVID-19 aid package.
Yes, it will be addressed, but when? Because while we've seen the first three get through relatively quickly, as far as Washington is concerned, this fourth one is working out to be, it's going to be a doozy, because now it's a gravy train for extraneous issues from both political parties. So it's going
to
be,
it's probably the last train leaving the station this round.
Absolutely. But look at this. Look at the signals that this is giving us. We've had three COVID-19 aid packages through, and it took the ag industry, both industry and the government, USDA, and even lawmakers, by the way, this amount of time to have the vision to know that there was going to be a logistical problems in getting animals to market. That, I think, sends a clear signal. Agriculture is woefully behind in strategy, in vision, in things like that. Was Secretary Perdue too bogged down in the minutiae of this CFAP program for the ag aid that he took the eye off the ball? I agree that he did. And look, SBA, the Small Business Administration, is on their second $500 million, right, of funding. Right. And USDA still hasn't got the rule, not the program, the rule for their program over to the Office of Management and Budget. You're getting a clear signal from me that I don't know what the heck is going on at USDA.
Yeah, and you couple that with even the program that's there, you know, still tons of question marks because we don't have that rule published yet. So, you know, no idea what the application process is or what some of the other limitations are going to be. But also just the inadequacy of the amount that's going to be available to some producers that we've talked about before. Then coupled with, like you said, lack of vision of what the other problems are going to be popping up in the food chain, it is a bit disheartening.
Yes, it's very disheartening to me. Again, I've covered agriculture since Earl Butt's days, and I'm just floored by this lack of follow-through on the part of USDA. Even today, Sonny Perdue gave an interview in which he was asked about the advertisements and statements by Tyson Foods warning of the food shortages, and Perdue said he had not seen the Tyson materials. But he believed it was, I just floored me. But he said he believed it was likely an effort to try to raise an alarm on what was happening. Again, that you course. Talk about a clear signal in that one. That's saying, excuse me, Mr. Secretary, where was your megahorn? You know?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, go ahead, Jim.
No, but to go back, we at least now have the country's attention of what agriculture at the grassroots have known for quite some time. And it only took Trump to hear this from a key staffer, meaning his White House chief of staff. And again, I don't really necessarily fault the president on this one, because you're only as good as the people informing you, and it was let down. Now, let's look at if there are some positives on this. This will clearly set, this is sending the signal to Purdue, because he's part of the process now, to get the necessary equipment, the PPEs and the test and things like that, you know, there. Into those plants. And I think they've identified, what, three major processing plants as, you know, priority. There may be, you know, more on that. But he's been upbeat as far as he expects the shortfall in meat production, which he said he estimates currently 20 to 30%, to be narrowed to 10 to 15% within a week to 10 days. And as plants reopen, he did admit they won't be operating at the same capacity because of the safety measures to control the spread of the virus.
Yeah, as an example, that Worthington, Minnesota plant where Colin Peterson was yesterday, or was near yesterday, he said that they had hoped to come back online at 13,000 head a day. Instead, because of those measures and some other factors impacting it, they were going to be at 3,000 head a day. So it's going to be a slow slog back to anything even resembling the previous capacity.
Which is still, from perspective, John, some increase in production is better than a plant being shut down.
Yes.
And I think that's what we have to look at right now, as measured incremental increases in the production of meat. And that's a positive thing.
It is indeed. And hopefully this week we're seeing the low point in this, and that they will, we will continue to see production ramp up, and we will continue to see those plant workers recover and be healthy and be safe on those production lines as this process moves forward. But as we do this, and as the processing capacity continues to remain low, at least we've got that situation that Jim talked about, where there's just no place for these animals to go. I mean, I've seen online individual farmers offering live hogs for anybody who'll come get them for anywhere from $50 to $100 a head, just so they can get them off their farms. But even if you can, even if you can get one at you know, fire sale prices, there's no place to process that hog.
No, that's exactly right. And there's, you know, there's some other challenges that come along with that too. Some of these people don't realize that hogs that live most of their lives indoors don't do well outside. So they're going to attempt to get these hogs, pay a low price for them, and feed them for a little while so they can have them butchered. And that's not likely to end well for anybody.
No. And I mean, I know a lot of things we've been hearing anecdotally, you're looking at November, December before you can find a slot for a local butcher to take on a hog.
Yeah, no, that's I think that's happening everywhere. That's the case here in Nevada, and I know that that's the case in Wisconsin as well. So, I mean, I would imagine that that's a pretty widespread issue at this point, because even those smaller packing plants that we still have throughout rural America, they can only process so many animals in a week. And, you know, that's why we have these larger packing plants, and that's why we have the cheapest protein in the world.
Again, the frustration angle, more on the producer side. I speak, when I'm allowed to now, to many hog producer meetings. And I know they're feeling more frustration relative to even food waste, which is now a threat, because they're, again, farmers are unable to find outlets to help feed the nation and the world. And USDA has also been criticized for letting millions of pounds of food rot while food banks struggle to keep up with the skyrocketing demand. Bottom line, John, this is the clearest signal I can give on this podcast. USDA lagged behind other federal agencies in its coronavirus response.
Is the chair of the House Ag Committee, Colin Peterson, and USDA, do you think they're going to be able to get the changes for Commodity Credit Corporation in this next round of coronavirus aid in order to be able to pay for depopulation?
Yes. But again, I don't know when, because of what we said before. You've got some key Democrats. Pelosi has already indicated whenever the House comes back, it's not going to be May 4th now, they're going to have their own plan. Boy, is that a signal that that's going to be loaded up with immigration language, the DACA language, open-ended funding for states like my hometown state of Illinois that I don't claim anymore because it's bankrupt. so you're going to have all those sensitive issues there on that. But when we get it, John, absolutely. Now, you saw earlier in the week, and again yesterday, I guess, Minnesota, Peterson was frustrated on how he thinks, and he's probably correct, USDA has usurped the role of the ag committees relative to their utilization of the Commodity Credit Corporation Charter Act.
Yeah, to the point, he said they should just might as well just dismantle the House Ag Committee.
Now, if that's not frustration personified, I don't know what is. That's why I led with that title, because that captured it right there. Peterson usually gets what he wants. He's a good lawmaker, and he will make sure there are stipulations. Now, I don't know whether that's a good or bad thing myself, but he's going to make sure there are stipulations in the future on the utilization of CCC funding. If he doesn't get that, you're not going to. That's going to be a chokehold on that legislation.
Well, now, Lisa, you know, even if we do get these issues resolved, it's still going to be quite a dance for farmers and ranchers and for the meat packers to try to coordinate, especially on the pork side, as we've said, this tightly choreographed dance that has been there in keeping the animals going at a smooth rate, you know, from the feeder's finisher to the packing plant. Are they going to be able to recalibrate? You know, if we go through a fairly sizable cull here, you're going to see a lot fewer piglets coming online as they try to figure out what the capacity is going to be down the road. So what's it going to look like trying to recalibrate that system?
You know, John, I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with the hog industry to know exactly what that's going to look like. But I can tell you that one thing most Americans don't understand is that this is not a start and stop kind of situation.
No.
These guys are going to buy fewer piglets or get fewer piglets. They're going to be finishing out fewer pigs. And this is a thing that has a longer tail. It's not that these are not chickens. We don't have 60 days to finish these out. It takes a lot longer than that. I think that the tail of this thing is going to be sticking around for quite a while.
John, recall that the hog producers were concerned even before the pandemic was even a story that this fall could see a problem of too many hogs relative to processing capacity. And so that's amplified, where we had the tremendous buildup in the hog population. So that would echo what Anna just said, that it's going to have a long tail.
All right. Well, Jim, as you mentioned, the Senate comes back to work on Monday. What's going to be on the front of their plate?
Oh, discussing what should be in whatever phase you want to call it, phase four on the concept. We had Chairman McConnell from Kentucky. I shouldn't say chairman, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying that he didn't want infrastructure as part of the phase four approach. So that's a marker. There. I don't know whether that's negotiating, leverage or what, but it's going to be an assessment of what they're hearing from their constituents and, you know, some of the next steps, because the plus side on this one is we're beginning to see a thawing of the stay at home thing. I mean, I can even see it here. Not a lot, but and I know you can too, probably, and that's a good thing. And it looks like we're going to begin the transition throughout May, and it looks like June could be the month that we could have a really check on whether or not we can accelerate the getting back to whatever normal is now.
Yeah, and I think, and Annalisa, I'd like to hear you weigh in on this too for what you're seeing out there in Nevada. But, you know, we are seeing people starting, especially as we've had some nicer weather, not right now, but a few days ago, people starting to wander out a little more and do a little more, still practicing social distancing and being wary, but at least getting outside and out and about a little more. And I think that's probably going to be the best measured approach. I mean, I know there's been a lot of angst about relaxing some of the lockdown provisions, but I think that's gonna, how we're going to have to do it is in a measured way to, you know, as we lessen some of the restrictions a little bit, see what happens. If things are going well, lessen them a little bit more and see how far we can take it before there is a negative impact. But what are you seeing out there in Nevada?
I would say that we're seeing a lot of unrest. Nevada is a unique state in that we have two major metropolitan areas and the rest of the state is really super rural. And so, our governor extended the stay-at-home order to mid-May yesterday. Today, he's going to release our, quote, plan to recovery, I think is what he's calling it. I think there's a lot of people here that would like to see counties have more authority to make those determinations on when we can be out and about themselves, because we're all being treated like we have the population density of Las Vegas, and that's not the case.
That's what demonstrations are for. That's what you'll see demonstrations then. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Regardless of where you are in population size, I think if we get into June with the same restrictions we have now, you're going to start seeing a lot more unrest and people willfully, I hate to say it, but disregarding the restrictions that we have on now, if, like I said, if they are still in place in June, because I think we are not at, but nearing a breaking point of, you know, people staying at home and quite frankly, being locked inside with their families all the time.
Well, again, as you just said, it's the spring. I mean, I usually go look at new cars every spring, whether I'm going to buy one or not is just the right of spring for me.
And then one this year?
No, not this year, but boy, I still love to look at new cars. And then the cherry blossoms, of course, I missed. You know, of course, the opening day of baseball from being still being the world champions, I couldn't go to that. So, yeah, it's really escalating, you know, it's escalating fast.
It is, and it's going to reach an inflection point here sometime in the not too distant future. But again, I think if they do, my opinion, if they do some sort of measured relaxation so that they can relax a little bit, test it, relax a little bit, test it, I think it's going to be the best approach to successfully getting things as back to normal as we could hope for at this point.
Yes.
All right, well, let's wrap up with a look at planting. My word, Jim, when USDA came out with their crop progress numbers on Monday, I mean, we expected a big number, but not that big number. You saw Iowa and Minnesota double the five-year average. Nearly every state, except for some in kind of the eastern Corn Belt that had seen some rain, most everybody else saw big progress in planting over last week. And a lot of that... some of those areas slowed down this week because of the rain we'd be getting like here in northern Indiana, but still where they've had the window, those planters have been rolling just as fast as they can.
Absolutely. And that gives some positiveness to the farmer because he or she loves to plant corn and beans. It's a relatively open season right now. Now you have to always worry if the rains continue. We've seen that before, but yeah, what a tremendous pickup in the planting rate. So at least we're off to a good start. I'd rather see production than not have it.
Yeah, and it's such a psychological boost. I mean, even though there's a lot of question about what's going to happen with this crop and the price of this crop, it is just such a huge sign of things being back to normal in a very unnormal world that the growers that I've talked to really seem to get a psychological boost out of that. What are you seeing, Annalisa?
It's the same. You know, we're in the field here now, and my husband said Mother Nature doesn't care about the virus. And I think I think that is a comfort for people that, you know, we're not, we are as humans are worried about this, but the rest of the world's not. And I agree that it's a good lift for producers to be in the field doing what they like, eating their normal field snacks, doing their normal things. I mean, I think that there is a special element to this year with kids being home and kids getting to be part of that more yeah. than they normally are.
As we're seeing all over Twitter right now.
Yeah. Yep. You're seeing 12 and 13-year-olds planting beans, and it's a highlight. I think for me, seeing all of that happening, and one of the bright spots of those kids having to go through what is, by all standards, a challenging situation in terms of distance learning.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, let's wrap it up as we do every week with where we're going to be watching for signal in the coming week. Annalisa, start with you.
I don't know. I guess
that's a thinker, huh?
What's going on? Yeah.
She just wants to live. She wants to live, right?
I would just like for this to all be over. I know that's not how it works. But I think the
president told us it was going to just miraculously disappear back in March. So
I know. One of the things that I was thinking about today is that 2 weeks ago, I was crying at my desk because things are really hard right now. And now I'm crying at my desk because farmers are doing what they do.
Indeed. And that brings up an important point that we should probably talk about that isn't talked about enough, in that recognizing that this is having a psychological impact on all of us. You know, even though, like in my case, I've got it relatively easy here. I still can do my job. I'm doing it at home. But just because things are so different, there are stressors there. We need to recognize it and recognize that it's not just us, that it is happening fairly universally, so that others don't feel like they're suffering in it alone. It is happening to everybody, even if it does seem silly, because you do have a fairly outside of being locked down, a fairly ordinary life outside of it, there is impact. It does impact you psychologically, and you need to recognize it and deal with it and talk to somebody if you need to, and know that you're not alone in that, because it is going on, like I said, nearly universally. Having said that, Jim, where are you going to be watching for signal in the coming week?
Well, two things. First, on the aspect of what's been going on, I know a number of college kids who just think through what they're going through. They spent at least 4 years going to college, and now they can't officially graduate like we did. Okay, mm-hmm. They can't even go to graduation. Internships are being taken away because of the lack of business. Some of them are doing it virtually right now, from the way I understand. I've talked to a couple on that, and so I really feel for them, because that's a loss they won't be able to recover.
But coming into a job market that's lost 30 million. Jobs already in just a matter of weeks, and trying to find new employment in the middle of that is going to be very, very difficult.
As far as the week ahead, I'm going to focus on the ethanol. We've had a number of lawmakers, forget how to pronounce her name, Abby Finkenauer from Iowa, Democrat from Iowa. She introduced a bill along with Angie Craig, Don Bacon, I believe, and Roger Marshall on the ethanol infrastructure, to provide funding to build out additional ethanol infrastructure. Frankly, should have been done years ago, but at least, she's doing it. And then we had a number of lawmakers, and including former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, who said, let's tap the CCC. And he went through the history of when he helped the cotton industry. Remember when we had that seed cotton program? He had to dance around that issue. And then Congress eventually added seed cotton as the product eligible for the PLC and the ARC program. And Vilsack said a similar approach could be used for ethanol. And I think that's a good signal and an upbeat, item to leave on, John. I think that's going to happen.
Which leads me to two questions. One, do we get $50 billion in funding in CCC in the next round of COVID aid?
You're going to get a higher number, at least 50.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do we get the $68 billion?
68 might be a little difficult. It makes sense. You know, remember when Farm Bureau, Zippy Duvall first said, if you're based on inflation concepts, it should be that high. And that's interesting that, Peterson didn't pull that out of his hat when he recommended that. He saw that. So at least the focus is on, we're in a different world right now. And we also have to look at the Commodity Credit Corporation borrowing authority. It should be increased, and it will.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week's DC Signal to Noise. I'm John Harris, along with Jim Wiesmeyer and Annalisa Laca. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of DC Signal to Noise.